On first and 10, Dalton fakes to Mixon, throws it high and deep. A.J. Oh, Green baby. Catches at the Buffalo 40, sprinting toward the middle of the field at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
Woo. Baby!
77 yards! Andy Dalton finding A.J. Green, who roasted the rookie cornerback, Tre'Davious White. Dalton looking for A.J. Green, makes the catch at the 30, angling toward the sideline at the 15, 10, and he is tackled inside the 5. He beat Tre'Davious White, and the Bengals will have it first and goal inside the 5-yard line. Dalton hands it off to Mixon. Mixon trying to bounce it out toward the right pylon.
Yeah.
Touchdown! Joe Mixon and the Bengals, and Cincinnati has the lead. 5 seconds into the fourth quarter. Shotgun snap to Tyrod Taylor. Deep drop. Fires deep downfield. Overthrown and intercepted by George Iloka. And he runs down to the 30-yard line. That might be coffin nails.
Bam, bam, bam.
Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Horde, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Cuts Like a Knife edition, as we discuss the breaking news that Tyler Eifert will undergo season-ending back surgery on Thursday, meaning he will miss the rest of the season and potentially could have played his last game in a Bengals uniform. I will discuss that at length with my broadcast partner Dave Lapham, as well as some other key topics going into the Bengals bye week, including what can be done to fix the running game, how Andre Smith's emergence at offensive tackle has impacted the O-line, and why Bengals fans should be excited long-term about the defense. Since Bill Lazor took over as offensive coordinator, the Bengals are averaging 25 points a game. That would be tied for 9th best in the NFL if it were for all 5 games. I'll ask Bill what he's done to turn things around. And in this week's Fun Facts segment, we'll talk football and fashion with Mr. Swag himself, Dre Kirkpatrick. Before we get to all of that, here's a reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. It's the greatest invention since the automatic garage door opener. After back-to-back wins over Cleveland and Buffalo, the Bengals are 2-3 and just a game behind Pittsburgh and Baltimore in the AFC North. While the Bengals have a bye this weekend before heading to Pittsburgh next Sunday, the Steelers and Ravens both have games. The Steelers are in Kansas City to face the undefeated Chiefs, while the Ravens have a home game against the 1-4 Bears. From an injury standpoint, the bye week comes at a good time. In the Buffalo game, Tyler Boyd, Dre Kirkpatrick, and Adam Jones all had to leave the game with injuries, and while Andy Dalton played the whole game, he was limping pretty badly for most of it due to an ankle injury, and he left the stadium on Sunday in a walking boot. The extra time off will help them, as well as number one draft pick John Ross, who could be back for the Pittsburgh game, but the same cannot be said about Tyler Eifert. ESPN's Adam Schefter broke the news that the fifth-year tight end will have back surgery on Thursday and is expected to be out for 4 to 6 months, ending his season. Since Tyler's in the final year of his contract, he'll become a free agent at the end of the year. I discussed Eifert's injury and his future with Dave Lapham.
If you have that bad of a disc issue, and it's the third time, had one in college, had one here in the NFL, this is the third disc procedure, not very good. I mean, and instead before, every back surgery in my mind is related. Because if you had back surgery, have a disc removed, they're going to move around. It's like a dentist told me, when you have a tooth pulled, if you don't have another tooth put in there, your teeth can move around in your jawbone. And your disc will move around in your spine. So, you know, once you start having those kind of surgeries and continue to try to perform the tasks that have to be done as a tight end in the NFL these days, because look at Dan. I mean, the number of guys, Tyler Eifert, Gronkowski, Jimmy Graham, all these guys, big body guys in the middle of the football field where they have to do their damage between the numbers. You know, these guys are 6'6", 6'7", 250 to 270 pounds. The hit is one thing. Then when they hit the ground with another body on top of them is a second hit that's even more potent than the first. Even Reed, who's a little smaller tight end from Washington, 35, 40-pound guy, he's having difficulty staying healthy. The only guy that I can think of in this modern era of tight end is Jason Witten. For some reason, Jason Witten has played forever and has never had any kind of a major injury. But just about every other big-body tight end that you can think of in this time – in the era of football, where they've been detached and done all the things that they've done, have really taken a beating in the middle of the football field.
Well, that's a good setup, because going back to the beginning of training camp, I asked Tyler Eifert that exact thing. Is the tight end more susceptible to injury than any other position in the NFL?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's a coincidence or if it's that, you know, we got to be large humans that move at a fast pace. You know, it's getting hit by bigger people. I don't know. I don't know why that is, but maybe it's a coincidence. Maybe it has something to do with the position. I don't know.
You're generally not, like, running out of bounds. You know, you're going over the middle. You're getting hit by two or three people.
Yeah, and it is. And, you know, you're a big guy. You're supposed to fight for those extra yards, where sometimes, you know, like a Marvin Harrison, he'd catch a ball, and if he's going to get hit, he gets down. That's just – and he stayed around for a long time, but we're big guys. We've got to fight for those extra yards and things like that.
Is there a way to try and, you know, be smart about it at your
position? That's so hard to think about where you're playing. I mean, you catch the ball, you're thinking get to the end zone any way possible. So that's tough to think about while you're playing.
Tyler Eifert played in the first two games of this season, then missed the last three. In his career, including possible playoff games, he has been in for 41 of 72 possible games. That's less than 60%. This is the final year of his five-year contract with the Bengals. They picked up his option. They're paying him $4.8 million this season. Originally, you thought, well, if he stays healthy and has a good year, they can tag him for next year. That would cost about $9.78 million, or in a perfect world, extend him if he proved to be healthy again. But right now, how can you franchise tag somebody for $9.78 million if they're looking at another back surgery?
I don't see how you can. And now it's like, okay, well, does he like it enough to stay here for a year? Or will he want to go somewhere else and start over with that system?
You'd think it would almost have to be a one-year deal wherever, a one-year prove-it type deal.
No question. I don't see him getting any kind of a long-term contract, unfortunately, because of the injury history. And, I mean, the medical report that's going to follow him wherever he goes is going to be extensive. I mean, not just his third back surgery, you know, going back to college, but then you have the ankle, you have the shoulder, you have the elbow. I mean, he's got zippers all over his body. I mean, he's had a lot of procedures. You know, and we talk about the big body guys. Tyler Croft, 6'6", 260. C.J. Uzama, 6'6", 265. Ryan Hewitt, who's kind of a combination fullback tight end, 6'4", 255. And the Steeler tight ends, the next opponent they play, Jesse James is 6'7", 265. Vance McDonald, 6'4", 267. Xavier Grimble, 6'4", 261. Big guys. I mean, that's offensive lineman size when we played back in the, you know, into the late 70s and early 80s. Now these guys are, you know, running 4.5s and 4.6 40s, you know, at that size. So it's basic physics. When you have a body that of that size running at that speed, the impacts are going to be that much greater. I mean, it all adds up to a tremendous force. You know, when you get hit by another, say, you know, good sized linebacker or over the middle or a safety, you know, that's got good hitting power to him. I mean, those are lethal blows. And then again, when you go to the ground, I mean, some of these fields, you know, they're a little bit better, obviously, than the old AstroTurf. Now it's like falling on concrete, but still. It's not a soft landing. There's no cushy landing there. And your organs get jostled. I mean, really, you're the internal part of your body is getting moved around. That's the way it is. You're basically suffering the impact of car wrecks multiple times a game. So how many times can you do that? How many times can your body hold up to that? And that tight end position is taking a ton of them.
As much as I like Tyler Eifert and would love to see him back in a Bengals uniform, he's 27 years old. If you're a tight end looking at multiple back surgeries, it's not going to get better. I mean, I don't want this guy to have back pain, debilitating back pain for the rest of his life. I mean, hopefully he sees a doctor in L.A. that says, you know what, the last surgery, there's a nerve that's rubbing up against something. This is an easy fix, and we're joking about this, you know, at this time next year. But bottom line is, I want this guy to have an enjoyable life.
And you're right, Dan. That's the thing. I talked about my cousin a few times. you start having those discs taken out and others moving around, it's hitting nerve, sciatic nerve. There's numbness. There's pain down your leg, into your foot, to your toes. There's like, it can be a burning sensation. It can be a pins and needles. It can be a numbness. It can be, you know, totally painful. That's tough. I mean, you can't do anything. The core of your body is betraying you. I mean, there's no opportunity to move with any kind of freedom. And now you're flinching because you're waiting for pain if it's not there. And that's what happened to my cousin. It just it ended up just not only forget about playing basketball anymore. He struggled. He struggled, you know, he's still struggling. Now he's into his later years of his life and he's really struggling. So, yeah, I mean, I hope that I'll guarantee you that Tyler has been feeling either numbness, tingling, pain, burning down his leg and into his foot and into his toes. I will guarantee you that that's the case. You know, it would almost have to be for him to be having to go over to, out there to L.A. and contemplate another surgery like that. And I agree with you, Dan. You know, like Mark Schlereth famously had 28, you know, knee surgeries. And every single time he said there was a new 100%, it was less than my old self. And that's going to be the same thing. This is much more significant than that. And so Tyler is going to be, you know, will he be 75% of what he was? Will he be 50% of what he was? No one knows, including him. So it's very, very sad dynamic for everybody involved. I mean, it stinks for Tyler, stinks for the Bengals, stinks for everybody. You know, there's nobody that comes out ahead in this kind of a situation, that's for sure.
And for anybody that suggests that somehow Tyler Eifert is soft,
oh my God.
Shut up, please.
Right.
I mean,
seriously.
He risks his long-term health for our football watching pleasure.
Right.
Not a matter of soft when you tear ligaments in your ankle or you need disc surgery on your back. It's the end result of playing a violent game and being unlucky.
It is. You know, it's like you start to get bigger and bigger. I remember Billy Kohler, who's now the defensive tackle with the Denver Broncos. I'm not saying Tyler's oversized for his frame. Tyler's got a big frame. But Bill Kohler, you know, get up to over 260 pounds to play defensive tackle. And probably his natural body weight's 205, 210. So he had a Volkswagen, he had like a Cadillac body on a Volkswagen chassis. The body was too big for the frame. And he kept blowing out his ankles, feet. He just couldn't support that body. And sometimes guys, you know, they get so big and strong, the muscles become stronger than the tendons and the ligaments and all the attachments and, you know, it's your normal body weight is not what you're carrying around anymore when you're all muscled up. So, I mean, everybody has different ways of handling all that. Some people's attachments are stronger than others, and some people can carry a lot bigger frame. Some guys can't. I mean, everything. And to say Tyler Eifert, I agree with you, Dan, is soft is ludicrous. Whoever's saying that, I wish you could experience his back pain for a couple days. Then tell me how soft he is, because it's no fun, believe me, no fun at all. When you're feeling it in your legs, your feet, your ankles, your back. I mean, back pain can be localized to one spot, but in this case, I'll guarantee you there's no way that it is. I'll guarantee you that he's having pain in either one or even my cousin even ended up having it in both legs, right down to his feet, up to his toes. You know, he was suffering and struggling. And this is a lot of years ago. Procedures weren't as good and all that, but I don't admire what Tyler Eifert's trying to go through at all. I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
When the Bengals drafted Tyler Eifert 21st overall back in 2013, I called Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly, and I'll never forget this line. Brian said that, quote, "Eifert turns field goals into touchdowns in the red zone." Well, that's exactly what he did the last 2 years for the Bengals. 13 touchdown catches in his Pro Bowl season in 2015, and 5 more in only 7 full games last year. It's a shame he hasn't been able to stay healthy. I wish him nothing but the best going forward. Time to change the subject. After failing to score a touchdown in the first 2 games of the season, the Bengals changed offensive coordinators, and things have been going much better since Bill Lazor took over. In the first 2 games of the year, Cincinnati averaged a mere 4.5 points. In the last 3 games, they've averaged 25. Lazor joined Dave Lapham and me on the Bengals Game Plan Show on Wednesday night. I'm going to ask you not to be modest. What do you think you did that's helped?
Well, I think the number one thing we did was we just got the unit, the whole offense, all the players. I think we just got them to believe. I mean, really, it sounds silly, but you know, when you put everything on the line like these guys do, you know, you're out there in the huddle with your buddies, or even on the sideline on game day. You know, things are going to go good. At times, you're going to go bad. You're going to have to get through some rough stretches. But the look on the guys' faces on the sideline right now is that they believe. They believe that they can make it happen. They believe they can score points. And I just think that's the biggest thing. And they're still the same they were. The guys have had success in the past, and they're the same guys they were in those first couple games. But right now, they believe.
And they believe and trust in you, Coach. I mean, they're buying what you're selling. I mean, you obviously are showing them a good way for sure. And you've done it without Tyler Eifert, which unfortunately it sounds like today with him out in L.A., the news that broke contemplating back surgery might not have him for the season. But you haven't had him in these three games, and you haven't had John Ross, you know, another guy that can stretch the other side of the football field and open the football field up for a lot of people. During the bye week, it comes, you know, very soon, three games into your tenure this season. But what does the bye week mean for you now? Does it give you even more time to sit back, take a deeper breath, and take a look at what you've got?
Well, from the time that this change was made, I was kind of counting down for when the bye would come because things happen really fast. There are only so many changes that can be made kind of in the middle of a game week. And there was everything gets focused each week on beating that opponent. At the same time, there was just a sense of, okay, if we just get through these three, win these three, and then we'll get a chance to step back, look at who we are, you know, take another day or two as a coaching staff. And actually we did it with the players too, of just let's go back and look at some of the things we need to do better, what we've actually done. And then let's see if some themes come up of some things that have shown up more than once that are stopping these plays that aren't good enough. And let's see if we can all talk about it and get it fixed. So then as a staff today, without the players, we've had a chance to do even some more study of ourselves. And so it gives us a chance to step back. Cause when you're in the heat of it during a normal game week, there isn't a lot of time for, you know, big picture reflection. So we try to do a little bit of that. And, of course, now it's a little bit later in the week, time to move on to Pittsburgh.
Right.
Offensive coordinator Bill Lazor is our guest. Statistically, I guess the biggest weakness so far is yards per carry in the running game, 3.2 yards per carry. In trying to build a more efficient running game, are you looking for the running plays that fit this group the best, or do you feel like you already know that and you're just trying to run them better?
Well, I think when we started the season, we would tell you that we had done a nice job evaluating and that we knew the plays that fit us. But this week gives us a chance as a staff to step back and say, hey, let's look at it with fresh eyes and let's be real good evaluators. Are we doing the right things with the guys we have, and how much of it is they just need to see it and do it better, or how much should we do something a little different? And I think most of the time when you step back and make those kind of evaluations, you see a little bit of both. And I think it'll be hopefully real clear to the players what they need to do better. I think this week it was. And I think we had some real frank conversations as a whole unit and then as positions. And then, you know, not to embarrass anyone or point anyone out, but let's be accountable for what we have and haven't done well. And then at the same time, I think as coaches, we got to keep our minds open that there might be other ways that can help add to what we're doing. But I think as a unit, we feel like if we can get the yards per carry to improve, everything else will rise. And we're committed to getting it done.
And you have been persistent. I mean, it's more than admirable. I mean,
it's not easy. It's not easy to call second nines all the time. But you know what? I think in this league, it's really, really hard. It's only certain teams are exceptions that can do it all one way. They can only run the football
right,
and have very little pass, or they can just come out and throw it and throw it and throw it and have very little run. Because usually those teams end up getting the quarterback hit a whole lot, and we don't want to do that. So I think the best way to do it is to be some level of balance. You know, it doesn't have to be 50-50. And try to be complementary so that the runs that you're running match with the play actions and the other specials that you're running. And I think we're trying to do that. Hopefully this week gives us a chance to keep evaluating and make sure we're doing the right stuff.
I've got a little formula in the running game where my thing was if we were hitting 4 yards a carry or more on 60% of our run plays, that was an extremely efficient running game. And so far in the three games that you've had, Green Bay, it was exactly a third. 10 of the 30 runs were for 4 yards or more, 33.3%. Cleveland, it was 36%. Last week against Buffalo, I'm taking away the kneel downs. There were one at the end of the half, and it was 31.8%. So, I mean, yeah, you're calling it, but you're not getting the results.
You know? Well, we're about halfway to your formula.
Yeah, really?
I think if I remember correctly, we called 30-30, maybe 27, including the kneel down. So, it's not a lack of trying, and I can tell you it's not a lack of effort or commitment from the players. It's not a lack of toughness from the players. It's just a matter of getting it all together, getting the right formula, and that's where we're headed. And like I said, we're committed to it. So
right.
It's going to happen, and I hope it happens right away. But if it doesn't, we're going to keep going.
Couple more questions for Bill Lazor. Considering his lack of practice and playing time, how much of a role could John Ross still play this year?
Well, I think these are long, long seasons, and it shows up in a couple ways. It shows up the ups and downs that you go through as a team. You know, you go through a phase where you feel like there's nothing we can do right, we can't get a win, and then, you know, 3 weeks later, you're riding the high. It's hard to imagine you're the same team. You know, but you know, being in the NFL for a long time, you realize how long a season it is. And then for players, it's so much different for them, especially a young player like John, than college football. And so what you got to do is you got to help him see the long term and see the fact that it's 16 regular season games and whatever we can do after that. And if it takes you one more to get ready, two more, four more, whatever it is, you're going to have a lot of football once you are ready. And, you know, you can make your impact. And, you know, I think a guy like John, who's a great athlete, he's very skilled. He's also, I think, very in tune probably with his body and his physical conditioning. He'll know when he feels like he's ready, not only physically, but also just to be out there on the field going full speed. I mean, to have missed time, usually it takes a guy a certain amount of reps going full speed against a DB to be comfortable. And John will know. John will know better than we'll know because he's had to do it before. And I think he hasn't been around us a long time, but he's a real bright guy. He really loves football. He's really into it. And so I think even with the limited amount that he's been full speed for us, he's developed a certain level of trust with us. So I think we'll work with him, and he'll get it figured out with us.
Final question, Coach, or comment and your reaction to it, and thanks for all the time. We know you're involved tonight with the fundraiser with Coach Lewis, Football 101, and admire you for doing that as well and giving back to the community. But I really like when I see you repeat plays. You know, it's like case in point, screen up in Cleveland. Went to the screen early. They had a defense that wasn't good for it, and Andy throws it away. Then you come back to it. Geo goes 61 for a house call, you know, when they're in that blitz scenario. But you see, and you same thing in the running game. I'll see you come back to it. You don't get spooked by, you know, like a 1 yard loss or a 1 yard gain. You'll go back to those run plays. How difficult is that for an offensive coordinator to, you know, to say, hey, you know what? These things, we designed them. They're going to work. I'm going to call it again. How tough is that?
Well, Coach Lewis jokes that if an NFL offensive coordinator repeats a call, he might be in danger of losing his union card. He said it's not allowed. He tells me all the time, but we've repeated a few. We had a pass that we repeated on third and long in the game, and both times, once by completion, once by penalty, got us the first down. And usually on third downs, you don't do that, but mm-hmm. I guess we like. You know, I remember a story when I worked for the Washington Redskins. I worked for Joe Gibbs, and excuse me, Joe Bugel was his offensive line coach.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously he's been a head coach in the NFL, but it was the famous offensive
Hogs.
Line coach for the Hogs.
Yeah,
back in the heyday of the Redskins. So this was back in the 2000s, and Coach Gibbs' second time around. And whenever that kind of question would come up about commitment to the plan, you know, we've gone in with this plan, and this is how we're going to attack them. Coach Bugel would remind Coach Gibbs about one of the Super Bowls they had gotten to, and you know, for 2 weeks they practiced their old counter tray play, which, as you know, we still run here at the Bengals and love it. And you know, the first two times they ran it in the Super Bowl, it got stuffed. And on the sideline, Bugs would tell the story, say, "Boss, don't blink. You know, keep going. We've worked too hard on this play. We'll get it right." And then, you know, it was one of those the next 22 times we ran it for 200 yards and won the game or something like that. You know, so I always think back to that. Now, it's easy to say in theory when you're sitting in the, you know, having a coffee after lunch, but to be on the sideline and have a play stuff, that's not that easy to call it again. But I think you have to do a good job communicating as a staff during the game. Someone told me once, really, really good, and it bothered me when they told me, because I was young to the NFL. They said, really good high school coaches improve from Friday to Friday, and really good college coaches improve the team from the first half to the second half, and really good NFL coaches should improve from one series to the next. Mm. And I just think that as a staff, we're working really hard. And this is also one of the I guess you'd say, evolutions of what we're going through right now. We're working really hard to communicate on the game day, to have very specific roles. And sometimes when something doesn't work, it doesn't mean it's a bad play. Maybe we failed at one spot.
Right.
Maybe it was absolutely the worst look, but they're probably not going to do it again, so go ahead and call it again.
Right.
Or we can, I can make that adjustment. You know, Paul Alexander might say, "Bill, I can make that adjustment and we'll be fine." And I think so. You can deal with that kind of coaching over the headsets and on the sideline. And I think that's part of coaching in this league. And that's why we take it personal when at the fourth quarter of the games, if we're not getting the points we need, well, hey, let's look at ourselves as coaches. Are we helping the guys make the adjustments? And that's, I think, what I thought in the Green Bay game. You know, we ended up not winning the game, but we drove the ball down the field in the fourth quarter and kicked a field goal. In the obviously, the Cleveland game was a little different kind of scenario, but then in this past game, we scored 10 points in the fourth quarter. Of course, one was right at the beginning of the fourth. But, you know, you like to look at it and evaluate yourself as a staff. Hey, are we making the kind of adjustments during the game? Really, way more gets done on the sidelines than halftime. You know, people make a big deal of what would you do at halftime. Well, shoot, we're doing it all game.
Right.
You know, let's do it all game. Halftime is just a chance to use the bathroom and get a snack. You know, but so we take that personal, I think, and take some pride in making adjustments. And hopefully that's part of why we can repeat plays, because we feel like it's still a good look.
Our thanks to Bill Lazor for taking time out of his crazy schedule for that conversation. And it's going to be interesting to see how he attacks the Steelers' defense next week. Pittsburgh is number one in the NFL against the pass, but 28th against the run. The Steelers are allowing nearly 137 rushing yards per game and 5.1 yards per carry. Now time for this week's Fun Facts segment, where we get to know the person under the pads. This week, it's a cornerback who earned a 5-year, $52 million contract extension this past offseason. Time for some fun facts with Dre Kirkpatrick from Gadsden, Alabama, more specifically the Oak neighborhood Gadsden, Alabama. How rough was that growing up?
It was very rough, you know, but at the same time, it was fun. A lot of the elderly in the neighborhood, they made sure they disciplined us, took care of us like they was their own, like we was their own kids.
One of your first big purchases after you're drafted by the Bengals was to buy your mom a house. How nice is it? How much did she splurge?
it was a nice penny, about 5 bedrooms. It's a nice family house. You know, we have a big family, and it's a lot of room in there for everybody to move around comfortably.
We're doing Fun Facts with Dre Kirkpatrick. How old were you when you caught the football bug?
Nine. You know, my mom, she was very strict on me playing football as a young kid. So the pee-wee stage, it was kind of rough because my mom didn't let me play football, but I was always playing in the neighborhood, and I was one of the better kids in the neighborhood. But so I knew I could play, but my mom would never let me until my daddy stepped up and was like, hey, you've been doing good. You've been having good grades. Just go out there and give it a shot. And it was a secret. She didn't even know I was playing.
We're doing fun facts with Dre Kirkpatrick. I read that in your first high school game, you had interceptions on the first two plays. Is that true?
Yes, it is. Very true.
Describe them.
It was my freshman year. I was a young kid, and some of the guys, we were playing another rivalry school in my same city. And I knew some of the guys over there, and they was hooping and hollering, like, yeah, we coming at you. So I played safe. I was just, like, I didn't want to give up nothing deep, so I was just playing everything in front of me, and they tried me deep first play, and, you know, the ball kind of fell right in my hands.
As we record this, you are proudly wearing a Crimson Tide hoodie.
Yep.
I think most folks know that you won two national championships playing at Alabama for Nick Saban.
Yes.
I've never met the guy. Tell me about Nick Saban.
Oh, man. I can put in similarities of somebody as far as demeanor and how he want things done. And him and Zim was, to me, when I first got here, I was like, God, is Coach Saban here? Like, you know, because they so demanding, and which is a positive thing. But they personality gels together, and he's a great guy, man. He's always the same person every day. You know, he's very big on guys being up and down. So he try to be the same person every day until Miss Terry. When Miss Terry come in, he kind of mellow out. He kind of get quiet and get behind the scenes. But he's a very great coach.
Let's get away from football for a moment. You love clothes and shoes. How much time do you spend shopping?
In the off season, man, you know, I grab the computer every day. Some days I purchase, some days I don't. You know, I'm just into fashion. You know, my girlfriend, obviously, she's into fashion also. So we always just throwing, spreading ideas. We go down twice a year to the Magic Show. Well, I go once in the summer, and she goes in August. To Vegas, to the Magic Show. So we always trying to stay up on the new trends.
Describe your fashion sense.
It's wow, you know. Some I just kind of do things that sometimes certain people won't do. You know, I feel like that is fashion. You know, I sometimes go in my closet and put some old dirty shoes on and kind of like have a West Coast type of skateboard look. But at the end of the day, they dirty, but it's the swag. It's the culture.
We're doing fun facts with Dre Kirkpatrick. How many pairs of shoes do you have, and do you actually wear most of them?
Some I don't. I gave away about 150 shoes this off season, mm-hmm. moving prior into my new place. But maybe about 500-600 pairs of shoes that I have.
A collection that you are very proud of.
Yeah, you know. And then also, I started a new collection when I got to the NFL. I gave away over 200, maybe 300 shoes when I was in college, because I had been saving them since high school. So over the years, they just kind of collected, and they was all worn down. And I kept my favorite ones, but for the most part, I kind of got them back.
Dre, have you started your record label?
Yes, I have.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, Game Records. You know, I kind of went public this offseason. And, you know, it was just something that I felt like it was time. I felt like I had the right artists. And they've grown in their music. They constantly working. I think the big surprise would be my female artist, Saida, who next few days I may just start putting little snippets out there just so people can hear her voice. She's very dope, man, and I'm behind her 100%.
Back to football for a moment. Perhaps your most memorable moment with the Bengals was the pick six on Monday Night Football against Peyton Manning back in 2014. When you see that video or even a still photograph of that moment, what goes through your mind?
It changed my life. I tell people every day that play changed my life. And I always tell people, you know, when you look at the way it was set up for me when I first got here with all the great guys, we had all the first rounders. You know, a lot of people will look at it and be like, it was meant for him to fail. You know, and for me to go out there and continue to compete, my number's been called. I've been on the bench all game, and go out there and make the two plays that I did. You know, I truly say that changed my life, because those plays got me my starting job.
You love to talk basketball in the locker room. What's your favorite team, and what players do you love to watch?
I don't necessarily have a favorite team, but LeBron will also be my favorite player. You know, Allen Iverson is the greatest of all time to me. He was my hero growing up. Jordan, you know, he's Jordan, but, you know, I was Allen Iverson guru. You know, he was my guy. But, you know, when I left from there, I turned my focus into the Cavs with LeBron.
You have a son. How old is he, and what is he passionate about at this age?
He's 11. He got my name, DeAndre Kirkpatrick. Man, he's passionate about everything, man. You know, he came to realize, though, unlike me, that basketball isn't his favorite sport. He just like it. But I think he's going in the direction of baseball and basketball and football.
All right, last question. If someone had said to you as a 7 or 8 year old kid growing up where you grew up that someday you would sign a 5-year, $52 million contract, what would that little kid have thought?
Man, you got to be kidding me. just for the simple fact where I grew up at, not too many people get an opportunity to make it out. You know, fortunately, Cornell did. But, you know, just, you know, it was just wild just to even imagine at that age, like, hey, I'm being in it. That wasn't even in my process. You know, it took me to go through some adversity, go through some things in life, have my son before I realized, like, hey, there's more to life than just the things that I was around.
You're off the hot seat. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Dre only played 6 snaps before hurting his shoulder last week. We'll see if he's fully recovered in time to face the Steelers a week from Sunday. The time of that game has been moved back, by the way. The NFL must expect it to be a good one, since it's been moved to 4:25, guaranteeing a bigger audience as part of the CBS doubleheader. Over the last 2 weeks, the Bengals have gone from 0-3 to a game out of first place. Time to bring back my broadcast partner Dave Lapham to look at some developing storylines. Lap, 3 weeks ago, the Bengals started rotating Andre Smith in on the offensive line. In that first game against Green Bay, he played 43% of the snaps. Then against Cleveland, it was up to 70%. Then against Buffalo, 71%. What has he done for the O-line?
I think he's stabilized it. I think he's given them a physical presence in the offensive line. I think he's given them some veteran leadership and experience. So I can see the rotation at least continuing. And to me, if you start a rotation after you've designated 2 starters at the beginning of the season, you know, the door's been open to crack. So now Andre Smith is probably saying, I'm going to make sure I take care of myself during the bye week, because when it comes back, it's open season. It's a competition. I want one of those starting tackle jobs. And Oboihe and Fisher should be thinking the same way. I want to come back ready to go. I want to be better than I've played. I want one of those starting tackle jobs. So hopefully, when they go to Pittsburgh and the remaining 10 games after that, the level of play at the tackle position will do nothing but get better. And I think eventually Andre Smith is going to settle at one of them, and then it's going to be a battle for the other 2 guys who's going to be the other tackle. Or maybe they'll continue to rotate both of them to continue that development process. But the way Andre Smith is playing, you know, I think he deserves to take the preponderance of the snaps, if not all of the snaps at one of the tackle spots.
Lap, you interviewed Andy Dalton after the win over Buffalo last Sunday, and he said the number one thing the Bengals still had to fix on offense was having a more effective running game. Cincinnati next to last in the NFL in average yards per carry. Can they fix it, or at least make it considerably better during this bye week?
They have to, Dan. They better, because their first game is on the road against Pittsburgh. And if you can't have a modicum of success in the running game on the road against Pittsburgh, and you have to drop back and pass every snap with all that crowd noise and everything going on there, man, that's tough sledding for an offensive lineman. I've been in that situation against the steel curtain, and the curtain drops on you pretty quickly. So, you know, you have to be able to have some sort of efficiency. You know, my formula remains the same. In my mind, if you average 4 yards a carry, 3 times 4 is 12 yards. That's a first down. If you only average 3 yards a carry, 3 times 3 is 9 yards. That's not a first down. So you have to have 4 yards per carry on 60% of your rushes to have some sort of an efficient ground game. And the Bengals aren't. They may have a 12-yard or 16-yard carry and then 3 carries for no gain, -1, +1. And now you're averaging 4 yards a carry, but you don't have an efficiency. It's not, you know, 75% of your runs are negative and only 25% are positive. So having that consistency in the running game is so important. And I admire Bill Lazor. First 2 games, he ran the ball 30 times. In the game against Buffalo, he ran it 27, now really 24, because there were 3 kneel downs at the end of the game for Andy Dalton. But he's trying. I mean, he's trying. And then, you know, when he had to run the clock out, you know, after the sack by Lawson, they had no more timeouts, ran it. And you got a rookie running back, Joe Mixon, that hammers it in there for first down. You get rewarded for that run. But he has to, the running game has to say to Bill Lazor, I can do this. Keep calling me. Because at some point in time, he's going to feel like he's banging his head against the wall to try to run the football.
Lap through five games, the Bengals' defense has been outstanding. Tied for second in the NFL in points allowed per game, number two in yards allowed per game, number one in yards per play allowed, and a lot of guys are contributing.
No doubt, Dan. The last 2 weeks, it's been amazing. 128 snaps, 3.4 yards per play. That's crazy. They've given up 23 points, you know, less than 12 points a game. So you're right. Up front, every one of the defensive linemen got at least 20% of the snaps, it seemed like, in the last football game. And, you know, you're thinking, okay, you know, Buffalo, it's a good opponent. You want to keep guys fresh for the fourth quarter. You know, they're going to run the football a lot, you know, rotate a lot of guys in there. Paul Gunther has no problem with playing any of them. You know, he's got Glasgow in there. He's got Billings in there. He's got, you know, Carl Lawson coming off the edge in the pass rush. He's got Willis playing base defense as well as nickel. He'll roll them in and out of there freely. And on the back end, seeing so many guys, you know, at the corner and safety spots and in the nickel packages, you know, everybody's been playing snaps. It's been a rotation back there as well. Well, the good thing is now you have Adam Jones go down, Drake or Patrick go down. Somebody else comes into the huddle and it's like, oh, I'm good with you. You played. I know I can trust you. So that whole dynamic of competition is great. And if I'm on the bye week, if I'm one of the young players, I want more snaps. If I'm one of the veteran players, man, I got this young guy breathing down my neck. I better keep it going here. I better make sure I'm, you know, dot my I's, cross my T's during the bye week here and come back ready for Pittsburgh, because it's going to be very competitive. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Coaches, I think if you show coaches that you deserve to play, they're going to find ways either schematically or just on a pure rotation to get you on the football field. And it's good for everybody. If everybody contributes to the pot gets bigger.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe and give it a rating or leave a comment. It would be great to know how many of you are listening and just what you think. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.